Hello and welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd be hit with DeKervain's tenosynovitis if you handed me the mere notion that you missed today's show. 2015 giving report and 2016 forecast. We don't need to wait until June. Atlas of Giving CEO Rob Mitchell releases the Atlas's analysis of last year's giving and their initial forecast for 2016. Adding commentary are professors Paul Shervish from Boston College and Doug White from Columbia University. Because you can't have a report without academic commentary. It's just not done. We're sponsored by Pursuant, full-service fundraising, data-driven and technology-enabled. You'll raise more money. Pursuant.com. Also by Crowdster, online and mobile fundraising software for nonprofits. Now with Apple Pay, mobile donation feature. Crowdster.com. I'm very glad that the latest data brings Rob Mitchell back to the show and the studio. He is CEO of the Atlas of Giving, reporting on and forecasting charitable giving in the U.S. In his past, he led national fundraising for the American Cancer Society. They're at atlasofgiving.com, and he's at philanthroman.com, which could also be read as philanthroman. That's on Twitter, not philanthroman.com. At philanthroman, or if you prefer, philanthroman, which is probably what he prefers.
Or we could do at Atlas of Giving.
Or Atlas of Giving. Rob Mitchell, don't start talking until I say welcome, Rob Mitchell.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Welcome back. I'm not gonna tolerate anarchy on the show. Welcome, Rob Mitchell. Welcome back. It's good to have you back.
Thanks, Tony. It's always good to be back.
You're very welcome. And don't correct me. No, you can't. You can't correct me, actually. I'm a little off today. I'll tell you what, Sam, why don't you bring down Paul and Doug's mics? Because Rob and I are going to talk for a few minutes, and then we're going to bring Paul and Doug in. Rob Mitchell, before we get to the announcement, the big announcement, I saw the press release today and everything. Tell us about Atlas of Giving. What is this thing that you're running?
Atlas of Giving is the only measurement of charitable giving in the United States by sector, source, and state that is produced monthly. And we are also the only forecast of charitable giving by sector, source, and state produced updated monthly.
And how do you do this report and forecast?
Well, I had a situation with a board member when I was at the American Cancer Society who was looking for a benchmark on how we're doing. And he suggested that charitable giving in the United States was tied directly to certain economic, demographic, and event factors. And if we could identify what those were, we could build a benchmark. So we hired a firm of 25 PhD level statisticians and analysts, and we were able to, and we gave them 42 years of published giving data. They were able to come back to us with they not only found what factors were involved in charitable giving, they found out what strengths for each, what the strengths of those factors were.
Relative strengths.
Relative strengths.
Okay.
This is called correlation science.
Mm-hmm.
So they came back to us with an algorithm for national giving when matched with 42 years of past history, matched at 99.5%, which we call a correlation of coefficient of correlation. And that was great. So that was our first algorithm.
Okay.
And since then, we've built we now have 65 algorithms. We have one for each of 9 sectors. We have one for each of 4 sources. So individuals, foundations, bequests, and corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have one for all 50 states plus DC.
Okay. All right.
This is the same kind of technology, by the way, that hedge funds use and other forecasting and analytical firms use today, different from things that were created several decades ago that were things like an econometric model, perhaps. So,
well, there's econometric data in your algorithm.
There absolutely is.
Yeah.
There absolutely is. But And our algorithms get better. The more we use them, the more we're able to find out what the strengths of the factors are and what factors are involved. For example, in one of our sources, there is a correlation with auto part sales. Now, that a correlation does not necessarily mean a relationship.
Yeah.
It just means that there's a strong correlation. And in that case, that correlation is a very strong correlation. We've also recently found that there is a strong correlation with equipment, heavy equipment leasing. And
interesting. Okay. Correlation, not cause and effect, but...
Well, sometimes but it's cause and effect. Sometimes it is, but right. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah. Okay. And there's numbers of factors for all these different algorithms that you have, for the 65 different. Okay. All right. And how many years have you been doing this?
We've been doing this since 2010.
Okay. All right. Let's get to the announcement. Let's start, of course, with the review of 2015. We had a nice increase from 2014 to 2015, did we?
We did have a nice increase, not as good as the one from 2013 to 2014 to 2015.
No, wait a minute.
Excuse
me. We're doing 2014 to 15.
15.
But this was, you're a little nervous? You've been on nonprofit radio before?
I'm scared to death, Tony.
Is it the heat? Because I told you not to be an anarchist? Is that why?
No, it's because
it's hot in the studio today.
Because the professor is in the room.
Doug is. His mic is off. He can't even say anything. Well, he can, but we're not going to hear it. No, and Paul is listening. No, you just shouldn't be. We did this last year.
Yeah.
Okay. Take a deep breath. Take a deep breath.
I'm ready to go.
Okay. He came from San Antonio, so we'll give him a break.
All right.
So from 2014 to 2015, we had a pretty nice increase, did we not?
Yes, we did. We had a 4.6% growth increase in total giving in the United States for a total of $477.55 billion, which is the largest amount ever recorded in charitable giving.
Okay. And we just have like a minute and a half or so before we go out for our first break. But, you know, we have the hour together, so no rush. What are a couple of the highlights from the 2015 giving? Just name two.
I would say that summer giving was actually better than year-end giving, which would be a surprise to most people.
Yes, it would. Okay, we'll talk about that. And what else you got?
The other thing is that since the depth of the Depression in 2009, charitable giving has grown 51% through 2015.
Okay, since the depths of the recession in 2009. Okay. We're going to go out for our break, and when we come back, Rob and I are going to continue talking about some highlights, and then we'll bring in Doug White and Paul Shervish, all for the 2015 Giving Report and 2016 forecast. Stay with us.
You're tuned to Nonprofit Radio. Tony Martinetti also hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a quick, 10-minute burst of fundraising insights published once a month. Tony's guests are expert in crowdfunding, mobile giving, event fundraising, direct mail, and donor cultivation. Really, all the fundraising issues that make you wonder, am I doing this right? Is there a better way? There is. Find the Fundraising Fundamentals archive at tonymartinetti.com. That's MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. Thousands of listeners have subscribed on iTunes. You can also learn more at the Chronicle website, philanthropy.com. Fundraising Fundamentals, the better way.
Welcome back to Big Nonprofit Ideas for the Other 95%. Okay, Rob. Let's start with this summer giving. Very interesting. So we're talking June, July, August, bigger than October, November, December.
Actually, it was May, June, and July.
May, June, July. Okay. And what do you think accounts for this?
Well, as you remember, I said we're working off of economic factors, and mm-hmm. one of the biggest economic factors we're working off of for some of our algorithms is the value of the stock market.
Yes, which was down in December.
Way down in December. And then Secretary Yellen of the Fed announced a rate increase.
Yeah, high interest rates.
It didn't help either.
Yeah, high interest rates, bad for giving.
High interest rates, bad for giving, and they are a harbinger of inflation coming.
Okay. Or we should say higher. I mean, inflation, as historic values go, interest rates are still quite low.
Very low.
But higher. Okay, spell that out for us. Why does a higher interest rate mean a likely decline in charitable giving?
Well, you have to consider the fact that 73% of all charitable giving in the United States comes from individuals. And so it's all about disposable income.
Yes.
So if you're paying more money, I know that you've just bought a new place. If you're paying more money for your mortgage, you have less money to give.
Mm-hmm.
If you're paying more money for your car payment, you have less money to give. If the interest rates are higher, you're going to be paying more. And inflation comes into effect in much the same way. You're paying more for the items that you usually pay for, and so you have less disposable income.
Okay.
And when 73% of the charitable giving comes from individuals,
right,
that makes a huge difference.
And the higher interest rates, you said, suggest inflation.
They suggest coming inflation.
Coming inflation. Okay. They're a predictor of...
They are predictor.
A leading what would we say? What's the...
I called it a harbinger, but...
That's not the technical term. We got to be... This is nonprofit radio. We got to be fancy. Leading indicator. Isn't that a
leading indicator? Is that a good one? Yeah.
Do I have that? Okay. I only have a bachelor's degree in economics, but... and Rob is alluding to the fact that I'm buying a home in North Carolina, actually, on the beach in North Carolina. That's what he was talking about, my home purchase. Okay. So I presume from all this, we saw a decline in charitable giving from November to December.
Yes, we did.
And that's what hurt the fourth quarter. And so it actually started
from October to November, and then it really took a dip in December.
Oh, so did we see a decline from September to October?
Yes.
Oh, we did. And then November was lower than October?
Yes.
I'm not sure about that. Maybe I remember wrong. Look at your charts.
No, November was all slightly higher than
slightly. October. Okay, but yes, a smaller decline. I'm sorry, smaller increase, and then December was down from November.
Correct.
Yes. Okay. All right. So that accounts for our fourth quarter, not so good.
Not so good.
Okay. Okay.
And we've had other fourth quarters that haven't been so good. 2001 is an example. Charitable giving was looking good until we had September 11th.
Yes.
And then if you were a non-disaster charitable organization, non-disaster related charitable organization, your giving dried up for 6 months.
Mm. And we're going to get to, well, actually, this right now, not that was a recession in 2001, but we've recovered very nicely since, you said, 2009, in the midst of the recession.
Yes. It's been a remarkable recovery, fueled mostly by the stock market. And for us, as we analyze the data, it's not so much about what's going on. It's where your money comes from. How do you raise money? Colleges and universities raise money very differently from a very large nationwide charitable organization or a church that relies on lots of small gifts from lots of donors.
Yeah.
And when unemployment is high, one thing that we know very, very specifically is that when unemployment is high, it really hurts those large organizations that rely on those small gifts and those events that rely on small gifts. And it takes as many as 2 years after one becomes reemployed or finds a new job for them to resume their giving. And if they have a hint that they're going to lose their job, they stop giving even before they lose their job.
Now, in 2015, I presume unemployment would have been a helpful fact, would have been a positive factor.
Absolutely.
Unemployment was declining.
Absolutely, a positive factor.
That was a bright spot for 2015. Okay. And you said we're up 51%, I think, from 2009?
From 2009. Recession?
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about as a percentage of gross domestic product. Now, GDP. Atlas of Giving says we're at 3.5% of GDP for charitable giving.
Real GDP.
Okay. Make the distinction, please.
Inflation adjusted.
Okay. Thank you. the conventional wisdom is 2%. A lot of people out there saying 2%, including Giving USA and a lot of others. That's the pretty common number. Is everybody else wrong and Atlas of Giving is right at 3.5?
You're absolutely correct.
All right, what's the distinction? This is because we're talking billions and billions, many billions of dollars difference between 3.5% and 2.5%, 2%.
What's really amazing, Tony, is if you look back 40 years over Giving USA data, they always come up with the same answer. Always.
2%.
2%.
Yeah. Well, they and a lot of others, they're not the sole ones out, they're not outliers.
But there have been
say it's 2% and it's been that for decades, I believe.
But there have been some major things happen that aren't accounted for. For example, technology. I mean, think about technology 20 years ago. We didn't have technology to support special events. We didn't have technology to support donor databases. We didn't have this kind of sophisticated.
Well, yeah. Okay, but you're saying the world has changed.
The world has changed dramatically. Plus, we have added 1.5 million charitable organizations. So not all of them are going to make it, but there are a few that are going to make it and make it really big, and that makes a difference also.
All right. So these are factors that would lead one to conclude. They would suggest that intuitively that giving would have increased as a percentage of real GDP. But that's our intuitive sense. I mean, we need data that shows it's 3.5 versus 2. If you're the outlier at 3.5%, so we need more than just intuition.
Okay, well, if you look at our numbers for 2009, they were at 2%, but because of what's happened since the recession and taking into account how we measure, it's near 3.5% now of GDP.
You're seeing it rise. You've seen it rise now since 2009. I thought. You've been doing this since what, 2011, I thought, or 2010.
2010, but we've also back. That goes back for sector, source, and state that goes back to 1968.
That's where you had the 99.5% accuracy. Okay, just trying to keep you honest here. Please.
Well, there's a professor.
Nonprofit
here.
Radio, for God's sake. That's the least of our concerns. This is nonprofit radio. That should be not Columbia University and Boston College. Nonprofit radio should be your leading concern. Okay, so you're saying that since 2009, you have...
And the stock
Atlas
market...
Of Giving has seen increases. Yeah, no, we'll get to the factors. Okay. Okay, but you've seen increase from 2% to 3.5% of real inflation-adjusted gross domestic product.
Absolutely.
Charitable giving as a percentage thereof.
Yes.
Okay, speaking like an encyclopedia. Okay, so what are some of the factors? No, technology has improved. Mobile giving was—I don't know if we had mobile giving in 2009. I can't remember, but it certainly has become quite a bit more prevalent since 2009, 2010. What other factors do you attribute this 1.5% growth in?
We've had crowdfunding. We've had prize philanthropy. We've had.
What was the last one? Crowdfunding and what?
Prize philanthropy.
Prize philanthropy. What does that mean? This is jargon. I'm putting you in jargon jail. Prize philanthropy. What is prize philanthropy? I've never heard that.
Prize philanthropy. A few years ago, Starbucks offered a $4 million prize to the organization that could get the most votes. And they brought broke it up. So they used social media to get the votes. And so prize philanthropy entered the equation.
Okay. Other factors? This is a 75% increase. In as a percentage of GDP from 2 to 3.5.
Absolutely. Well, look at what the stock market did since 2010. It's been on a tear. Mm-hmm. Now this year was different, but it definitely made a difference. And another thing that has made a significant difference is donor advised funds. If you look, Fidelity announced this week.
I just saw it today. How many billions of dollars went to in 2015? Three and a half billion, I think.
Yep.
Helped 166,000 grants, helping 100,000 roughly charities or so. Those are ballpark numbers. But the $3.5 billion, it was in the Chronicle today. Now, Donor advised funds are being criticized. It was just also just, what, 2 weeks ago or so in the Chronicle, there was a commentary, op-ed piece, that enough money is not flowing out of them. And it was very harsh against donor advised funds. Too much money, basically, the writer said, parked in donor advised funds, not being distributed to charities.
Donor advised funds have added more to the charitable economy than anything else has in the last, I would say, in the last 5 years. And it's because, now, for the commentator you're talking about that did the op-ed for the Chronicle.
Yeah.
He provided no data. And yet we have data from donor advised funds that show that donor advised funds have provided as much as four or five times as much in terms of percentage for grants to other charitable organizations as have private foundations.
4 to 5 times as much from donor advised funds as private foundations.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Not specifically on that point, but we may get to it. Let's bring in our academic team. Doug White is here in the studio again. Welcome back. He is Director of Operations at Columbia University's Master of Science in Fundraising Management Program. He also teaches board governance, ethics, and fundraising. His most recent book is Abusing Donor Intent, chronicling the historic lawsuit brought against Princeton University by the children of Charles and Marie Robertson. We covered that book with Doug on Nonprofit Radio. Doug White, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Tony. It's good to see you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. I love that deep radio voice. Wonderful. let's go a little general before we get to the details of donor advised funds and improvement from the recession. What strikes you about the 2015 report from Atlas of Giving?
A lot of things. First of all, I think you're right to focus on how different it is from what we're hearing from GivingUSA. And what strikes me within that is we as a philanthropic community very much pay attention to what GivingUSA says and not very much attention to the Atlas of Giving. And I'm thinking that should change.
Okay. Well, we actually did a face-off with Atlas of Giving and GivingUSA. Rob was on that show, and there were representatives from the board and the academic team at Indiana University, the Center on Philanthropy there, and that was maybe a year and a half or 2 years ago. So we had them meeting, and I'm not sure I don't think anything conclusive came of it. They both believe that they are the most accurate. Doug, you think that Atlas is more accurate?
Well, I don't know for a fact, but what I'm hearing makes a lot of sense. I'm not a statistician, and I think my life is better for that. I'm sorry. But I would say that the news that I'm hearing from Atlas of Giving that is so different from GivingUSA is a little akin to me as if someone had told me that the way we measure the stock market growth is wrong. It's that fundamental because we rely on those numbers for so many things. And it's very much a part of our DNA in our community, our charitable community, that I think we need to really do some investigating and find out really who's right here. And so far, Rob sounds like he's got a lot of information that I think I'm hearing that GivingUSA does not. Is that true, Rob? Is that what's going on here?
It is true. Atlas of Giving, GivingUSA created their econometric model more than 40 years ago. They have tweaked it a couple of times. As I said, they always come up with the same answer, which is giving is 2% of real GDP.
Yeah. So you're claiming that they're using an algorithm that's 40 years old, and the factors within that algorithm have changed dramatically over that period of time, and those you are on top of.
That's what we're on top of.
All right. And let's be fair. We got to be fair to GivingUSA.
Sure, of course.
They're not here to say how their algorithm has evolved over,
and I'm not taking
their
the
process
side.
Has just, evolved. Yeah,
I'm not taking the side. I just need to dig into the question.
We're exploring.
Yeah. I would say this is the major difference between the Atlas of Giving and GivingUSA. GivingUSA will not come out with their 2015 results until late June.
Yeah, we have to wait till June, right?
Late June. It's not monthly. It's not contemporary, and it contains no forecast.
Yeah. The June is a big problem because if you're basing your fundraising projections and plan on what happened last year. Although, I mean, I hope you have other factors besides the besides history, but you have to wait till the middle of the year to get the review of last year, and then there isn't a forecast.
Well, there's one other fundamental problem that they have, and that is that they're using IRS data that is more than 2 years old to come up with their number for what happened in the year they're measuring. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't know how you can predict the news or measure the news with a New York Times from 2014 on this date to say what happened today.
Okay. All right. We're gonna try to leave that there. Let's see what Paul Shervis has to say. I'm not comfortable going too much further because, again, the Atlas is not here to defend itself, essentially. Let's bring in Paul Shervis. He's a professor emeritus and retired as professor of sociology and as director of the Center on Wealth and Philanthropy at Boston College. With John Havens, he co-authored the very well-known 1998 report, Millionaires and the Millennium, which predicted the now well-known $41 trillion wealth transfer from baby boomers. He's currently writing Aristotle's Legacy, The Moral Biography of Wealth and the New Physics of Philanthropy. Welcome back, Paul Shervis.
Hello, Tony. Hi, Doug. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Paul, I'll ask the same question I asked Doug. What strikes you as a highlight of this 2015 report from Atlas of Giving?
The larger amount of giving that is chronicled by the Atlas in contrast to the Giving USA numbers. Giving USA has about a total giving of about $340 billion, and the Atlas, of course, is, what is it, 470-something?
477.55.
Yes. Those are two different years, though.
Well, yeah, that's two, right. But Paul, isn't that the, that's the 2014 Giving USA, $340 billion, right? That's 2014. They haven't released their 2015. They won't until June.
That's correct. But they're not going to go up to 475.
Right.
And so that contrast is dramatic. Now, we have done some research when looking into the independent sector study. We were hired by Kellogg Foundation and by independent sector to evaluate their survey that was the benchmark for giving from the early 1990s through about 2000. And we actually went to various households that were interviewed by the Gallup organization. And what we discovered as we sat there with the interviewer and then sometimes talk to people separately, was how much more giving, when you ask the questions in more detail, people are going to report. So if people understand more about what you're asking and prompt them, both in two ways. One way is what sector they gave to. You would say, now what did you give to education? And then you would prompt them again and say, what would be the amount that you gave to that to education by people coming to your door, by being asked by an organization, by answering and responding to mail solicitations, to email solicitations, and so on. And we found out, and this was actually research done in coordination with, I wrote it with Patrick Rooney and at the Center on Philanthropy, and we found out that the more prompts you give, the higher the giving is. And the problem is, in both survey research, you don't get a chance to ask those prompts. And secondly, for the independent sector, we found that it was underestimating giving. And when you ask more carefully to the people that they had interviewed, so some of our own behavioral research indicates that there is probably more giving than what is being picked up by the Center on Philanthropy.
Which is the giving
to the center,
which is the Giving USA report.
They do supplement the IRS data with their Center on Philanthropy panel study for people who are giving at lower levels who don't itemize. So they do have some additional data, but I think that we're missing a lot in giving.
Okay, Paul.
I think that the Atlas is probably more accurate, and there's some other factors we can talk about later about how we're even the Atlas may be underestimating giving.
Okay, all right. We have to take just a little pause from our conversation. Sam, maybe you can adjust Doug's mic because I feel like you're not so comfortable. Are you okay there? Are you all right? Mic was drooping. Okay. I don't want to have droopy mic syndrome. So we have more on this conversation coming up. First, Pursuant, their cloud-based tool is one of their cloud-based tools, Velocity, designed to specifically help gift officers, giving the gift officers the analytics that they need and that you need as an organization to stay on task and raise more money. Data like number of active proposals that are out, average close rate, your average time to close, and the all-important dollars raised. It's a simple problem solution statement. You need to raise more money, Velocity helps you. It's one of the Pursuant tools at Pursuant.com. I also have to give a shout-out to Crowdster. They have their new one-of-a-kind Apple Pay mobile donation feature, which helps you increase your mobile donations. Crowdster gives you crowdfunding campaign sites that have back office simplicity, but for outward facing elegance. So your donors are seeing a very pretty and very simple site, and your back office also has a very simple site to work with. And they are at crowdster.com. You could use Crowdster and Velocity together. Crowdster for your outward facing campaign and Velocity for your analytics and back end. Time now for live listener love. We've got live listeners. They're all over the world. It's unbelievable. Seoul, South Korea. Annyeonghaseyo. Tokyo, Japan. Ni hao. And also Niigata, Japan. Ni hao. Coming into the U.S., St. Louis, Missouri. New Bern, North Carolina. Stamford, Connecticut. Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Live love. Live listener love to all the live listeners, those and others. Affiliate affections. You got to send affections out to the AM and FM station listeners throughout the country. Our affiliate stations playing the show whenever they fit it into their schedule. No, you're not listening live, but your station has worked us in, and we're very glad to be a part of your station timetable. Affiliate affections to the AM and FM listeners. And the podcast pleasantries. Over 10,000 people listening wherever, whatever, whatever time, whatever device, painting a house, washing dishes, driving, subwaying, training, planing, podcast pleasantries to the over 10,000 podcast listeners. Okay, let's go back to our review and forecast. Paul, I'm going to ask you about donor advised funds. And then very shortly we're going to get to the forecast for 2016. But Paul Shervish, what's your take on donor advised funds? I know you read that Chronicle of Philanthropy op-ed that was critical. I don't know you did, but 99%
yes,
likelihood,
I did.
Of course you did. Okay. What's your sense of donor-advised funds? Is too much money parked in there? Was that a fair assessment of donor-advised funds?
I don't think it is. First of all, we have money parked in every university endowment. We have money parked in every charity that has an endowment. And what people are doing with donor advised funds is complementing their private foundations, or like my wife and I do, we park money there a little bit each year, so it accumulates. We make gifts from there, but over the years, we're hoping to make a larger contribution to something that is very important to us. And by being able to contribute each year, more than we distribute from the donor advised fund, we have a pool for a larger gift. And I think that's one factor that's very important for the wide range of people who have donor advised funds and not just wealth holders. Secondly, I think what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If we're going to talk about donor advised funds, it was correct, Doug was correct, that the donor advised funds, the Fidelity report indicated it gave $3.1 billion last year. And if you look at the Gates Foundation, it gives about $2 billion, and it adds the $1.5 billion that it has to give away from Warren Buffett each year. That's $3.5 billion. Now, that's more concentrated, more focused, so it is able to accomplish major changes across the world. But in terms of sheer amounts of money, this is rivaling the Gates Foundation.
Mm, okay.
Poor thing.
All right, Doug White. Let's turn to you. Donor advised.
Go ahead. Okay.
And Doug, also there's a suggestion that donor advised funds should have a requirement to give, maybe it's 5% the way private foundations do now.
From each
donor advised fund, right?
Right.
Doug, what's your sense of donor advised funds, and what do you think about putting a mandatory donation requirement, Doug?
Well, if you do, you'll be way behind the curve, because the National Philanthropic Trust, which gathers up data on all sorts of aspects of the donor advised fund world, reports that on average 16 or 17% per year is being given out
from each individual as an average.
Yeah, as an average.
Ah, okay.
So anybody who's showing up saying that we should have a minimum will probably say 5%, because that's what the foundation minimum is. So I'm thinking, okay, you can make it a 5% minimum, but that's not going to really affect the real world. And going after a minimum in this particular case is really the wrong argument. I think we're really wasting a lot of time on this. That Chronicle editorial was something I do disagree with. I think there could be some more education on the part of donors and charities on how to distribute and what kind of organizations should be getting that kind of a money. That kind of broader education is a lot more important to me than having some arbitrary payout rule that's going to be a lot less than what's going on in reality anyway.
All right. There is one more thing, though, about that average. That's
okay.
An aggregate average.
Yeah.
But if you were to average things and take what percentage I give away, so if you did the average for each fund, it wouldn't be that 16%. And that's one of the arguments that's made in congressional hearings and so on.
Right.
So on the other side of that argument, it isn't 16%. That's the aggregate average, because there's a lot of people giving away a larger percentage of what they hold. But if you did an average of each fund, we would be down toward 6-5%.
Okay, right. Hold on, Paul. Let's hear from Doug.
And I totally agree with that, but I think that that point, and I'm going to buy into it 100%, is still not an argument to have a mandatory minimum. Okay, number one. But also, I don't know if
I
you
agree
meant
with
to,
you, Doug.
I don't know if you meant to say this, Paul, a moment ago, but you just gave a very good reason for not distributing. You're actually putting away smaller chunks every year based on your ability to do that, so that you can aggregate it to a point at some time in the future when you can actually do something very major with that. That's not a bad argument.
All right.
Yes, thank you.
I'm confused about the 5% versus 16 or 17, Doug. Can you
16 or 17 was what the National Philanthropic Trust said is the aggregate outlay of donor-advised funds last year.
Okay.
And Paul's pointing out that if you do it fund by fund, there are a lot of funds that don't come up to that number. They may be 5 or 6%, which means a lot of them are 30 or 40%. You know, it's going to be that way.
Oh,
so yeah. So all I'm saying is that the argument, the conversation is a total waste, in my view, of having a minimum. That's the bottom line for me.
All right. Let's move on. Gents, we're going to move to the 2016 forecast, which is, as Rob pointed out, unique for the Atlas of Giving. Rob, I'll turn it to you. What can we expect for 2016?
Not as good as 2015. We are, now keep in mind, before I say what I'm about to say, that we update our forecast based on economic, demographic, and event factors as they occur.
Each month. So this is the initial forecast
for 2016. This is the initial forecast for 12 months, the calendar year, for 2016. And our first forecast is that charitable giving will grow, but only at a rate of 2.6%.
2.6 versus the, what do we have, 4.2% from 14 to 15, did you report?
4.6.
4.6, thank you. Okay, oh, so a 2% difference. All right. So let me ask you this. How much did your 2015 forecast in January of last year differ from what we're now reporting?
It was completely different.
Completely?
Completely.
And I imagine politics was a part of that. The political campaign, we're in the presidential. What else? What else? The stock market.
The stock market was huge.
You couldn't predict what was going to happen to the stock. Anything else?
Those are two main.
Okay, those are main. And I'd like to say, well, aside from the stock market and the presidential election, what else you got?
Well, no, we were expecting a stock market correction earlier in the year. We were expecting it to be fairly sizable. Janet Yellen was also talking about raising interest rates in the first quarter of the year, and she put that off until the last quarter of the year, so that made a difference too.
Okay.
We were updating the forecast every month.
I understand.
So right. it kept getting better.
Okay. The presidential election cycle.
Yes.
A year. How does that factor in?
We've talked about disposable income. And when you talk about disposable income, you talk about individuals. You might be talking about corporations. But if money is being channeled to political campaigns out of disposable income from individuals and corporations, mm-hmm. There is less for charity. And so one of the things I'll tell the listeners now is that we are actually working on a study going back several decades to look at the impact of political campaigns on charitable giving from the past. And we intend to release that in June.
Oh, okay. All right. So for the time being, we would expect, is it as simple as, I tend to be a little simple-minded. Is it as simple as we'll see a decline in like August, September, and October of 2016 because of the imminence of the election in November?
The timing, I think, is going to be spread mostly throughout the year.
Okay, more even. Okay. Let's see. We just got about 2 minutes before a break. Doug, you want to, not before we're done, but before a break, Doug, you want to weigh in on presidential election as a factor of charitable giving?
I totally agree. I think a lot of people do. We're talking about it, disposable income. It can go one place or another. And this has been such an excited presidential cycle that a lot of money has gone there. When we talk about that, though, my mind is more on the dark money and the way C4s are being used wrongly, in my view. Mm. And so a lot of money is being siphoned through our sector, just not through the 501c3 portion of our sector. And that is, to me, a very big concern.
All right, let's go out for our break a little early, Sam. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation, focusing on the 2016 forecast. We'll bring Paul Shervish back in. Stay with us.
Like what you're hearing on Nonprofit Radio? Tony's got more. On YouTube, you'll find clips from his stand-up comedy, TV spots, and exclusive interviews. Catch guests like Seth Godin, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, Mark Echo of Echo Enterprises, Charles Best from DonorsChoose.org, Aria Finger of DoSomething.org, and Naomi Levine from New York University's Hyman Center on Philanthropy. Tony tweets, too. He finds the best content from the most knowledgeable and interesting people in and around nonprofits to share on his stream. If you have valuable info, he wants to retweet you. During the show, you can join the conversation on Twitter using hashtag NonprofitRadio. Twitter is an easy way to reach Tony. He's at Tony Martinetti, MARTIGNETTI. Remember, there's a G before the N. He hosts a podcast for the Chronicle of Philanthropy. Fundraising Fundamentals is a short, monthly show devoted to getting you over your fundraising hurdles. Just like Nonprofit Radio, Tony talks to leading thinkers, experts, and cool people with great ideas. As one fan said, Tony picks their brains and I don't have to leave my office. Fundraising Fundamentals was recently dubbed the most helpful nonprofit podcast you have ever heard. You can also join the conversation on Facebook, where you can ask questions before or after the show. The guests are there too. Get insider show alerts by email. Tony tells you who's on each week and always includes links so that you can contact guests directly. To sign up, visit the Facebook page or TonyMartinetti.com.
I'm Dana Ostermel, CEO of Deposit a Gift, and you're listening to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.
Paul Shervish, let's bring you back in. What's your thoughts on 2016?
I think that one of the major factors that is missed in a lot of this is the growth in wealth that is independent of the stock market, the privately held firms, and the amount of money that is generated by privately held firms and the contributions that are made by the people that own firms. When you get over 100 million, according to Federal Reserve data that we analyze, 50% of the equity that is owned, of the assets that are owned by, of their net worth, that are owned by the upper end, is in a privately held business. And so the stock market is one important factor, and we know that there are just dozens and dozens of variables that Rob puts into the model. But I think that we're going to have a sustained philanthropy, and it's going to be higher than the 2.6%. And I the
God
Center
on
Philanthropy
the day.
Recently came out with a projection probably to reflect Rob is doing. They came out with a projection of about 6% growth in the coming year. That's a product of the Center on Philanthropy. And so my view is that we're going to find sustained giving at a higher rate, and it's because a large proportion of the giving is accomplished by the very, very, very small number of households, 500,000, 600,000, 700,000. And depending on whether you do it by their income or by their wealth, that group gives between 20 and 28% of all the charitable giving. That's less than that's about a half a percent of the households in the nation. Mm. And so I expect that that wealth is going to continue to grow. Now, it does reflect the economy, what happens to these private businesses, but the amount of money that's being accumulated at the very top end is something that we have to consider as independent of the stock market.
Paul, that wealth that you're concerned about in the privately held companies, does that end up typically being inherited wealth to the next generation, or what happens to all that wealth?
Well, that's a debate, isn't it? The giving pledge is that they're going to give at least 50% in lifetime or through their estate of their, these are people at a billion and more.
Yeah.
And some of them are at 10, 20, and $30 billion. They're going to give half of that or more to charity. Now, that's in the offing. And as this group ages, we're going to find some of that coming through estates. If they don't give it through their foundation, to a foundation. So I think that we're going to find this continuing to be a major factor in philanthropy. Philanthropy is very, very, very top heavy. And so I expect there to be a greater than 2.6%. But I give the Atlas great credit. Last year, we talked about a 5% drop at this point. And it corrected it as the year went on when it got more information. And so I think the yearly prediction is less valuable than what we're going to find out each month along the way more accurately.
Okay, excellent. Rob, let's go back to you for 2016. What do you see from the sources of giving? So you're looking at corporate, foundation, bequest, and individual, individual being by far the largest. Do you see that staying mostly stable from 2015 to 2016?
Well, one of the disturbing facts is that corporate giving has continued to decline as a percentage of all giving.
Oh.
And that's one of the trends that will continue in 2016.
What have you been seeing over the past couple of years? What percentages are we seeing in the decline?
Well, from 5% to 3.3% growth. That's, I think, significant.
Growing, but at a smaller rate. Is that
growing at a smaller rate?
Okay.
The other thing is that, and this is the elephant in the room, is church giving. Fewer and fewer Americans are associating themselves with churches or congregations of any kind. And if you look back to Giving USA reports from 15 years ago, church giving amounted to 50% of all gifts. Now we're down to 33%.
Yeah, it's been, you and I have been doing this together for 2 years. This is our third year, sorry. It's been declining like 1% a year. Did you see it decline from 2014 to 2015?
Yes.
You did? Okay.
Yeah.
It's like a percent a year, so slowly declining. Paul, did you want to weigh in on that?
It's just that the upper end does not give a great proportion of their giving to churches. And the more top-heavy wealth gets, the greater total proportion of giving to churches is going to be down, just as a matter of statistics. But also, it's absolutely correct that church participation is down. And the relative amounts that are going to education and health are skyrocketing.
All right.
And that's in the Atlas, and that's in a report from the Center for the Study of Education, Ann Kaplan's group, that showed that giving actually covers 2 years, because 2014, some of the reports are in a fiscal year ending in June or in August, so it's really covering 2014 and 2015, and that's dramatically up this year.
Okay.
The amount that's going to higher education.
Rob, go ahead.
That represents the upper end giving, and so their proportion of the total amount of giving to churches has to go down when you have not only congregational participation slipping, but also so much more of the total amount of money going from high-end groups that give to education and other causes.
Right.
And one of those other causes, this has been a very interesting thing to watch, is that in 2015, the greatest growth in giving occurred in the environmental sector, which is the smallest sector, has been the smallest sector of giving for a very, very long time. So the proportion of the pie is being redistributed, less to religion, more to environment, human services, and education, as Paul pointed out. Those things are, we like to say we've got our finger on the pulse of American philanthropy. And nothing's in stone. Everything can change at any time. And that's why we produce a monthly report. We would love to produce one that's weekly, but we haven't figured out how to do that yet.
Doug, anything you want to add about 2016?
Well, I'm sitting here in fascination that Paul Shervis is thinking that Rob Mitchell is being conservative, because we're talking about how far out on the limb the Atlas of Giving is. And yet hearing Rob describe how that's put together is very valid to me. And I think we ought to have this debate again that you were describing happen 2 or 3 years ago, because I think it's important that we get to the bottom of it. The
face off. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Paul's bringing in some factors here that he's saying that maybe the Atlas hasn't yet considered the behavioral aspects of it. And what he says makes a lot of sense to me.
I will say, I'm going to wrap it up, gents. We did invite the Atlas and Giving USA to another face-off. It was several months ago. It wasn't for this show today, but several months ago, and didn't hear back from Giving USA. Rob was willing, but the Giving USA
didn't come
through.
You also extended an invitation to Blackbaud for the Blackbaud Index to do another face-off, and we never heard back.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, that was very generous of me. All right.
And they didn't respond either.
We have to leave it there. Paul Shervish, Doug White, and Rob Mitchell. Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you,
it's
Tony.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Next week, Gene Takagi returns. He's our legal contributor and the principal of NEO, the Nonprofit and Exempt Organizations Law Group. If you missed any part of today's show, please find it on TonyMartinetti.com. Where in the world else would you go? I'm still not sure about that for 2016. I'm taking my time to make that decision. We're sponsored by Pursuant, online tools for small and mid-sized nonprofits, data-driven and technology-enabled, Pursuant.com, and by Crowdster, online and mobile fundraising software for nonprofits, now with Apple Pay mobile donation feature, Crowdster.com. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. Sam Liebowitz is the line producer. Gavin Dahl is our AM and FM outreach director. The show's social media is by Dinah Russell, and our music is by Scott Stein. Thank you for that, Scotty. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.
What's not to love about Nonprofit Radio? Tony gets the best guests. Check this out from Seth Godin.
This is the first revolution since TV 1950 and Henry Ford 1920. It's the revolution of our lifetime.
Here's a smart, simple idea from Craigslist founder Craig Newmark.
Yeah, in sites or in presentation or anything, people don't really need the fancy stuff. They need something which is simple and fast.
When's the best time to post on Facebook? Facebook's Andrew Noyes knows.
At traffic is at an all-time high around 9 a.m. or 8 p.m. So that's when you should be posting your most meaningful posts.
Here's Aria Finger, COO of DoSomething.org.
Young people are not going to be involved in social change if it's boring and they don't see the impact of what they're doing. So you got to make it fun and applicable to these young people, because otherwise a 15 and 16-year-old, they have better things to do. They have Xbox, they have TV, they have their cell phones.
Ami Dar is the founder of Idealist.
It took 2 or 3 years for foundation staff to sort of deign to add an email address to their card. It was like, yes. It was phone. This email thing is right. Weird. And plus, why should I give it away?
Charles Best founded DonorsChoose.org.
Somehow they've gotten in touch, kind of offline, as it were.
Yeah.
And they'll do exchanges of brownies and visits and physical gift.
Mark Echo is the founder and CEO of Echo Enterprises. You may be wearing his hoodies and shirts. Tony talked to him.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that it's not what you make in life. It's you know, it's how you make people feel.
This is public radio host Majora Carter.
Innovation is in the power of understanding that you don't just, you know, just put money on a situation and expect it to heal. You put money on a situation and invest it and expect it to grow.
And savvy advice for success from Eric Saperston.
What separates those who achieve from those who do not is in direct proportion to one's ability to ask others for help.
The smartest experts and leading thinkers are on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%.